Okay, good morning. We will now start with the second part of this morning's proceedings. First of all, thank you very much for the invitation to be here. It's really my pleasure to be here today and to have some time to show you Alma and also to answer your questions. I told some of your colleagues that I spoke to, my two best friends are Hungarian. I knew them since 2012, and so far I managed to learn about 12 words of Hungarian, and none of them are useful for this presentation, or most of them are not useful for this presentation. I could have said good morning, but it's now a bit late to say this, so maybe I try my few Hungarian words a little bit later, especially if you ask questions which need yes as an answer. Okay, so then I can do it. My presentation will be in English with a Scottish accent. I hope that it will be clear for you to understand. If you have questions as we proceed this morning and also this afternoon, you're very welcome to interrupt. Please feel free to interrupt and ask any questions that you want. So I will immediately carry on with this part of the proceedings. You will see that I already have an Alma login screen on the screen, and I hope that you can see it. As Christian said in his presentation, Alma enjoys a monthly release cycle. So we are, in fact, looking at the June 2015 release, which was installed only last week on our production environment. So this is, of course, a demonstration environment that we're using here. So June 2015, the very latest release that is available. And I'm going to log into Alma using my own name and my password. And as Christian also mentioned in his presentation, the reason why I use my own name is that Alma is a role-based system. So when I log in, the system knows who I am and it knows the roles that I have in the institution. So it knows my job, basically. Okay. So Alma knows my job, and based on this, it tells me a number of things, and you'll see many examples of this as we go through presentation this morning. So when I log in, it takes me to this screen. This is my Alma dashboard, and in common with other dashboards, it's where you start. It's the first screen that you come to. It's where you start to do your work in the system. So I just want to explain some of the areas of the Alma dashboard. First of all, right in the middle, you'll see an Alma Analytics widget. So Christian mentioned in his presentation Alma Analytics. Alma Analytics is an advanced analytic reporting tool. And here, I've chosen to display some information that is useful to me in my job. So I'm looking at loans by patron group because that's interesting to me in my job. There are many, many Alma Analytic widgets that I could choose to display on my dashboard. The idea is that you don't need to search for information or for analytic data, but Alma presents it to you every time you log in. Okay, so if I want to show you another option, I can choose the option to add a widget. If I am interested in the activity of the catalogers, then I can simply choose that widget and I will then have this also on my dashboard as well. So each person, each user has their own Alma dashboard, and that dashboard can be customized to show things that are relevant to them in their job. So these are the things that are relevant to me in my role in this Alma institution. Okay, so this is the first part of the role based system, and we'll cover other examples of that later on. So I can also, of course, remove any widget that I don't want there as well. Something else that you'll see just towards the top where my mouse pointer is now, we have a notice that a service pack will be applied. So Christian mentioned that Alma is a software as a service solution. This means it's a bit like Gmail. If you have a Gmail account, then you just use it. You don't worry about upgrading it, maintaining it, backing it up, any of these things. You just use it and you let somebody else take care of it. That's very similar to Alma. You use it and Ex Libris takes care of it for you. Everything that is not using the system is taken care of by us. So you don't need to worry about it. And we just have some information here. A service pack is going to be applied. It's done in the maintenance window. So we have a maintenance window. It's between Saturday, early on Saturday, late on Saturday night and early on Sunday morning. And that's the time that we apply these maintenance upgrades, new releases, and so on. So I'm just going to dismiss this message because I've seen it now and I don't want to see it every time I log in. I just took a note of this message. So this is my dashboard. The next thing that I want to show you is my Alma menu. I also know what Alma means in Hungarian as well. That's one other thing that I specifically asked and they told me. Okay, so this is my Alma menu, and at the moment I just want you to have a look at the menu. I specifically want you to have a look at the left-hand side, which is the acquisitions menu. So here, this area here. The reason why I want to do that is I want to illustrate something just in a moment. So you can see here that this acquisitions menu is very extensive. There are lots of options, lots of things that I can do, lots of areas that I can choose. So what I want to do is I want to now log into Alma as a different person. Now, this is not something that you would do. It would never be necessary to do this. But I'm going to do it because I want to show you the difference between me and somebody else who is my colleague. Okay? So I have now logged in as one of my colleagues. Okay? He left his username and password on a post-it note on his screen so I can use it, although I shouldn't. And you can see that his Alma dashboard is very different to mine. Okay? He has lots of Alma analytic widgets on his dashboard. He has patrons by user group. He has loans by patron group. He has loans and returns by patron group. He has fines and fees by library. This guy is really obsessed with data, okay? He wants to know everything that's going on in his area of the library. So he has chosen to display many more Alma Analytic widgets than I. He gets this information pushed to him every time he logs in. He doesn't have to go to look for it. It's always there, okay? So let me show you his menu. Have a look at his acquisitions menu. Okay, it's very different to mine. Why is it very different to mine? Because he works in circulation, in fulfillment. He doesn't work in acquisitions. There are one or two things that he can do in acquisitions, but that's not really his job. That's my job. So the reason that I showed you this is that Alma has many, many options and many, many menu options. But I want to show you that it need only be necessary to see what you need to see. You don't need to see hundreds of menu options that you can't use. So this guy, for example, Chris Parson, he can't go to look at the funds in acquisitions because he doesn't have the appropriate role. So this is how Alma works, based on these roles. Okay, so I'm going to log back in as myself, because this gives me the privileges to do what I want to do for the next part of the demonstration. So I try to show you many things in the next hours, but I want to start with cataloging of an item, because this is quite fundamental. Before you can do much in the library, then you need to have a catalogue record for a book. So I'm going to catalogue this book. So the first thing that I would do, of course, is check that I don't already have the book in my collection. Okay, so let's assume that we've done that, and I know that I need to catalogue the book. So I know that in Hungary you have a central cataloguing system. And I know that at the moment you catalogue in your local systems and then load records to the central system. Okay, that's correct? Yes? Okay, good. By the way, where are the catalogers? Are there some catalogers? So, okay, great. You'll enjoy this bit. Okay. I know that. So I'm going to go to the menu and I'm going to open the metadata editor. Okay, so let's just do this. Okay, so now I open the metadata editor. Now ALMA supports today, as for your information, MARC 21 and Dublin Core formats. Okay. Now, I understand that you have a Hungarian MARC format, but you're moving towards MARC 21 as a country. We also support other MARC formats as well, so UniMARC and Korean MARC. It's not relevant to you, but today we support MARC 21 and we support Dublin Core. Okay. In actual fact, ALMA doesn't care about the format. Doesn't matter what the format is. What we have is we have containers, we have workflows, we have processes for MARC 21 and Dublin Core. So this is quite important. So I'm going to go to the file option and I'm going to say that I want to create a new MARC 21 bibliographic record. Okay. So I would imagine, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I would imagine that you would try, first of all, to find a record somewhere else rather than create it from scratch. Is that correct? So you would search other databases to see if they have a record that you can use. So that's what I want to do just now. So I'm going to come to the ISBN field, and I'm going to enter the ISBN for the book that I have, 978-963-867-5965. Okay, so far I didn't learn how to remember ISBNs. Many things, but not ISBNs. Okay, so I enter the ISBN, I come to the Tools menu, and I want to search external resources. Okay, so here I have many external resources. These are in fact, Z3950 targets. If you're a cataloger, then you'll know what Z3950 is. These are library catalogs or other catalogs that I can use to try and find a record for the book that I'm working with. Okay, so there are many here, and if you have others which are not here, then we can add them for you very easily. So I'm going to choose WorldCat. Okay. I'm just going to take out the year. It goes there automatically. And I'm going to click on Search. And when I click on Search, ALMA will make a connection to WorldCat and try to find this record. Okay? And you can see that that's already happened. So I found a book. It's called Hungary. It's Fine Wines and Winemakers. I also find lots of other much more academic books, but I didn't find them in WorldCat. Okay, so I was looking, or they were about the war, which I also didn't want in the demo either. So this is, I think, a nice. There's a very nice book on Amazon about Hungarian goulash, but it's not in WorldCat for some unknown reason. Okay, so this is the book, Hungarian, it's Hungary, it's Fine Wines and Winemakers. Okay, let's imagine that this is this book. And you'll see that I have many options, okay? Each of them does a slightly different thing. We can talk about it a little bit later if you want to. But basically, I'm going to choose the copy and overlay option, okay? That will bring the record into my system. I'm going to save the record. And in terms of the bibliographic record, that's all that I have to do, okay? That's all that I have to do. Now, of course, you might want to do more. Probably if you're a cataloger, you will want to do more. But now, this record is in my Alma. And I want to just prove that to you by coming to the quick search. So, Hungary, fine wine. I come to the quick search, I enter the term, and here you can see the record already. It's there, okay? So this is the bibliographic record that I just took from OCLC. By the way, we had to pay OCLC to do that. We did, maybe you don't. So I now have this bibliographic record for this book. So it's a very straightforward process to search an external catalog and bring a bibliographic record from that external catalog into my Alma system. Okay, so if you are a cataloger, are you happy now with this record or would you want to edit it? You would want to edit it, okay? Of course, because you're a cataloger. And I was also a cataloger and I want to edit it as well. So I'll come to the edit option, and I want to just show you some of the functionality that we have here. So here is the record from WorldCat, okay? And I'll just scroll down and I'll have a look at it. And what I can see, actually, is it has some local fields. So if you're a Mark cataloger, you'll know that anything that is XX9 or 9XX is a local field in Mark, okay? So 938, 948, 994, these are all local fields. So I want to show you a tool that we have. I go to the tools menu, sorry, I go to the edit menu. I choose the option to enhance the record, and I choose the option to remove the fields that I don't want. Okay, so there are options here. Delete 9XX fields. So this is going to run a little, we call it a normalization rule. Okay, so let me first of all do it and then show you what's happened. So now I'm running that normalization rule on the record. Let's go back to the record again, scroll to the bottom, and you see now that the 9XX fields have gone, okay? So a normalization rule, if you're an Aleph customer, then it's a fix routine, okay? You know it's as a fix routine. If you're not an Aleph customer, it's like a little program or a macro that does something based on some input that you've given, okay? So a little program, macro, runs on this record and tidies it up, basically, does something to it. Now, this was a very simple example of a normalization rule. It can be much more sophisticated than that if you want. So the normalization rules, and I'll show you some of the other examples. So I'll go to edit, and I'll look at enhance the record again. And you'll see that some of the rules can be much more sophisticated than just deleting a field. So for example, I can take information in the 001 tag and put it into the 035 tag, okay? These are just examples. You can create your own normalization rules if that's something that you need to do. Now, something else that's very important. I brought this record from WorldCat, okay? So I could define in the import profile that every time I bring a record from WorldCat, all of the local fields are deleted, okay? Or something else happens, okay? So you don't have to do it manually on the record. You can also do it automatically. Every time a record comes in from an external source, whether it's WorldCat, whether it's the Library of Congress, wherever it's from, you can define and automatically run these normalization rules so that these things will happen before you even start to edit the record. Because ALMA wants to make things easy for you, to automate as much as possible. So I'm just saving the record again. Now I'm saving the record without the 9XX fields, the ones that I deleted. So far, any questions from the catalogers? No. Okay. So we'll continue. So now I have my bibliographic record. So this is the bibliographic record for this book. I need something else, of course. I need a holding record and I need an item record. So I have one bibliographic record, and then for every copy, I would have an item record. This is very straightforward. Of course, you know this already. So I'm just going to create quickly the holding record, and then I'm going to come to the item record and create an item record. So now I'm describing this particular copy of Hungary, Its Fine Wines and Winemakers. Okay, it could be different to any other copies that I have in my collection. So I'm going to give a barcode. Today is the 9th, 11th, okay. 11, I try to make it easy for myself. Why they put the zero at the other end of the keyboard? That's very sneaky as well. Okay, gosh. Okay, as well as the Z. The Z is in a funny place as well. Not a funny place, in an unusual place for a British person. Okay, so I'm making the barcode 1106-2015, just so it's easy, it's the date, I can remember it. And then I will assign an item policy. The item policy governs the loan of the item. We'll come to it later. And this, because it's going to be very popular, obviously, it's going to be a 3-day loan item. So I enter this information, I click on save. Of course, there's tons of other information that I could enter, but I'm just leaving it at this stage for now. That's all that I want to do for now. So let me just go back to my ALMA dashboard. Imagine that it's a new day or it's the next day, and I want to search for this item, Hungary and fine. Just put in enough, and immediately I go, I see Hungary, it's fine wines and winemakers. I can see the bibliographic record. I can also see the availability. Okay, so I have one copy. One is available because nobody borrowed it yet, and it tells me where it is in the library. And there are many other things that I can do from this point to move forward with the record. So the first part of the demonstration really focuses on how simple it is to get a record from another solution, from Z3950 Target, bring it, edit it, add holdings and items, and now this thing can go to the shelf. It's ready to be used, okay? Maybe you would need to do something like print a spine label, or is this something you do? You would print a label to go on here, maybe a plate to go inside. These things can all be done by ALMA and other tools as well. So these things can also happen from the software. ALMA can take care of everything. Okay, so any questions? No? It's dangerous to not ask questions because I just keep speaking until someone else speaks. So, you know, we can, it's a risk, you can think. Okay, I try not to. So let's show you something else. I want to go now to the repository search. Here, at the top of the ALMA dashboard, we have the quick search bar. So this allows me to do a quick search, okay? I can do a quick search of many different things. So I can search titles, I can search physical items. I could also do a quick search of the vendor file, if that's what I wanted to do. Remember my colleague, Chris Parson, he can't do a quick search of the vendor file because this is also based on the role. And if you can't search the vendor file elsewhere, then you can't quick search it either. But what I want to do now is go to a slightly more sophisticated area for searching. So I'm in the area that we call the repository search. And this time, I just want to search for the term Hungary. Okay? So I enter the term, I click return, I'll press return or click on go. And now I see the records that are in my system. Okay, so in this case, in my case, I'm working for ALMA University. You can see here, ALMA University. So this would be the National Library or your university or whichever institution that you're actually working for. Okay, so these are the results from the institution. It's the library. It's the database, basically, that you searched. So I want to show you two other areas of functionality here. So at the moment, I have 153 records which are in my database. So in ALMA University, we have 153 items that are about Hungary or have Hungary in the title. Okay. What I want to do is I want to switch to the network. So Christian mentioned that it's possible to have in ALMA something that we call a network zone. Think of it as not consortia, but group of institutions that collaborate. Okay, we call it in ALMA a collaborative network. So if the National Library and 10 of the universities in Hungary decide for ALMA, they could build a network zone. And here, I can see now that there are 401 records which meet the search criteria. So in the collaborative network, in the other libraries that are part of my collaborative network, we have 400 items. In my institution, we have 153 items. Okay? I'm going to swap once more. And this time, I'm going to look at the community. So here, I'm moving the search again to the community zone. The community zone is an area, a database of shared data maintained by Ex Libris. It's for all ALMA customers to use. Okay, so it contains bibliographic records. It contains our central knowledge bases. It contains authority files, and here I can see that there are 1,509 records. So these are records that you could use that are in the community zone. So what I can actually see, this first item is an electronic book, okay, an electronic book about Hungary. I don't have it in my institution, but I could use this record in the community zone if I wanted to activate this electronic book, for example. Okay? So I guess that electronic books are becoming an important part of your business as well, right? That this happens. So what I can see, let's imagine that this first item, which is just called Hungary, we want to make it available for our users, okay? So we can see here that it's available from three different providers. It's available from eBrewery, it's available from Taylor & Francis, and it's available from eBook Library. Okay? Now, this information is coming from our central knowledge base. It's information that the publishers, suppliers, others give us to put in for our users to use. Okay? I can go and look at this in more detail, and we can also see there are others there as well. So let's go to the portfolio list. In fact, you can see that this particular electronic book is available from 13 different vendors. Okay, and this is very common. Electronic books are included in many packages. So if, for example, we now wanted to make that electronic book available, I have this option here, which is Activate. So I click on Activate, and Alma is now making available this electronic book to my users. Okay, so you can see here, tells me new portfolio created with a PID. It's a portfolio ID, you don't need to worry about it. What I just did there was I activated an electronic book and Alma made it available to the users. I want to just show you that by going to the quick search again. I'll just do my search for Hungary. And you can see now I have 154 records. 2 minutes ago I had 153. Now I activated it. I didn't need to catalog it because it's already cataloged in the community zone. I just activated it and immediately now it's available for my patrons to use. Okay? Now, something else about this. It's actually the first item. You can see it here. So this little icon here, it's two people. If you can't see it, then that's what it is. It's two people. This tells me that this record in my institution is linked to a record in the community zone. What does it mean? What it means is if a cataloger from, let's say, the University of Manchester edits this record and improves it, then your record will also be improved because you haven't cataloged it yourself. You've made a link to the record in the community zone, okay? So if somebody comes from the University of Manchester, edits the record, makes it better, then you will also get those improvements as well. Now, this is a good idea, okay, because it saves time and it saves you cataloging things that other people, in many cases the publisher, has already cataloged. But if you don't like the idea of somebody else changing records, you can copy the record from the community zone and then it becomes your record. Okay? So let's think about it. For an electronic book, I wouldn't bother. Okay? Because it's a transient thing. You will have it, you will not have it, it doesn't matter. If this was a very special publication about Hungary and you wanted to catalogue it to a much higher level, and you didn't want any changes made to the record, then I would copy it. Okay? So you have the option. You don't need to do the same thing every time. You can use some records in the community zone, you could use some records in the network zone if you had one, and you can have some records in the institution zone as well. So I want to just show you something else. I'll click to the community. So now I'm looking at all the resources that Ex Libris has with Hungary in the title. You see the first one, that's the one that we activated a few moments ago. This little icon here, which by the way is supposed to look like the Library of Congress, okay? So if you've been to the Library of Congress, you'll know that it doesn't really look like that. But that tells me that this community zone record is active in my institution. Okay, so I have it in Alma University, and I also have the second item in Alma University as well. The rest of them, I don't have. If there was a network, then I would also be able to see the records that were present in other libraries in the network as well. So the community zone of ALMA is all about shared data. So here we looked at a shared bibliographic record for an electronic book, but there's lots of other shared data in the community zone as well. So authority files, for example. So in Hungary, are you using the Library of Congress name authority file? Is that what you use? Sometimes, okay. So the Library of Congress name authority file is in the community zone. The Library of Congress subject heading file, the GND, which is a German integrated authority file, and many, many more. And the advantage for you is you can just use them. You don't need to pay for them. You don't need to maintain them. You don't need to do anything. You can just use them, and Ex Libris takes care of everything else. And I'll show you, I'll explain this in a little bit more detail as well. Okay, so any questions so far about the community zone? Yes. By the way, if you feel more comfortable to ask the question in Hungarian, you can, and Agerston will translate.
It's okay, it's just a simple question. What happens when you copy a community zone record? Are you creating duplicates in the database, or?
Okay, no, so it's a good question. So let's think about this electronic book. So I have two options. I can link to it in the community zone, and then if Manchester edit it, I will get the edits, okay? The other option is I can copy it. So I have a record in the community zone. I copy it to my institution zone, to my ALMA University. There's no duplicates. It's absolutely okay to do that, okay? So I take it from the community zone and I put it into my institution zone rather than linking to it. So there's no problem to do that at all. It's not a duplicate record.
You want to update the record?
So if Manchester edit the community zone record, but you copied the record to your institution zone, indeed it will not update it. That's right, yes. Okay. So, you know, it's important for you to know that we worked very closely with many, many institutions, not just our customers, but also, JISC, which is an institution representing higher education in the UK, OCLC, many others, about the governance of the records in the community zone, okay, about how we should behave when we're working with these records, what changes we should make and what changes we shouldn't make, okay? So, for example, if you're going to edit a record here, it's perfectly okay for you to add a Hungarian language subject heading to the record, okay? It's not okay for you to translate the title to Hungarian, okay? Because that's not useful for everybody else. Of course, you can put it in another field, but we have these guidelines about behavior in the community zone. And if you think of it, it's kind of similar to Wikipedia, okay? Generally, people who want to edit Wikipedia want to do it because they want to do good things, okay? And we think the same for the community zone. We can't imagine librarians who want to destroy bibliographic records. That would be very strange, okay? Who could find a librarian that wanted to deliberately destroy a bibliographic record? It wouldn't happen. So that's why we feel quite safe in this area, but we have also guidelines for it. Sorry?
What about when it happens not deliberately?
It's a very good question, actually. Let me show you this. So I will go to my book. In fact, it's a beautiful question. Okay. We should give this lady a pen or something, if we have one. I don't know if we have one. Okay, so I'm going back to the metadata editor. I click on edit. Okay, and it takes me back to my Hungary Fine Wines and Winemakers. Okay, no 9XX fields. But what I can do is I can go to edit I always get it wrong. I can go to Tools and I can view older versions of this record. Here's the version. Click on View. Here's the version of the record with the 9XX fields. Okay? And then I could restore. So now my record has the 9XX fields again. Okay? Catalogers. I mean, it's beautiful, right? It's amazing. You can see. So you can see actually all of the historical records. I only have one because I saved the record and then I changed it and I saved it again. So if I now save this again, the original record with the 9XX fields will become the current record. And if I go to Tools and View Versions, I will have three versions of the record that I could go back to at any time. So if somebody corrupts it deliberately for some reason, or even accidentally, which would be more likely, then you can go back. Okay. Now, there's something else here that is related to this functionality as well. I just want to try to show you. I want to just open the record again. So Christian mentioned that we have BIBSYS as an ALMA customer. BIBSYS is a consortia of libraries in Norway. There are 104 libraries in total in the BIBSYS consortia, and including the National Library. And the National Library is responsible for the production of the National Bibliography. Okay, it may be the same here. I don't know if it is or not. But we added this functionality here, the cataloger level functionality. It's also an ALIF if you are an ALIF user. What it means is that if Christian is a level 5 cataloger, he's a senior cataloger, and I'm a level 3 cataloger, I can't edit a record that he created. Okay? So that means that you can protect the record in your institution and in the network. So you can protect the record from people that you don't want to edit it from editing it. I don't know if it's important to you, but it's important for BIBSYS. So if you create a record for the National Bibliography, for example, if you're responsible for that, then maybe you don't want people editing it. So if you put it with if somebody with a higher catalog level saves it, then this will be protected from editing by people with lower cataloger levels. Okay, so let's move on. 20 past, so I want to move to acquisitions. So do we have some acquisitions people in the audience as well? No? Okay, you can see what they do now in the next session. So I come into work. Let's imagine it's the next day, and I get an email and it says, we have a book, it's called Hungary, Fine Wine and Winemakers. We need additional copies of the book. Okay, so this is an example. So first of all, I search the catalog. So I search for Hungary, Fine Wine and Winemakers. I find the record, okay, and you'll see that I have an option to order. So I click on order, and now I go to the area where I can create a purchase order line, or an order, in other words, for this item. So now I can choose what type of purchase it is. ALMA will try to suggest, so it's a physical one time, okay? We'll talk about other options a little bit later on. I can say who owns the purchase order. So maybe if it's a university, for example, often universities have multiple, not branches, campuses, libraries in different campuses. So who is it for? So this one is for the main library. And I can also use a template, because maybe I most often use one particular supplier and so on. So I can put this information into a template. So I'm going to go ahead and create a purchase order line. Alma is just telling me that I already have it in the inventory. I know that. So I want to just say confirm. So I click on confirm. And now I can go ahead and add the other information that I actually need. So to create an order, then I obviously need a vendor, okay, or a material supplier. So I'm going to look at my vendor file, and I'm going to order this from National Booksellers. Probably you would remember the code of your vendor. If you were working in acquisitions, maybe you're working with 5 or 6 or 10 principal vendors, you would remember the code. You don't need to look every time at the vendor file. This is, again, just for the purposes of demonstration. And then I want to assign a price. Okay, so we don't have Hungarian forint as an example here, but of course it's very easy to add it. It's not necessary for you to maintain exchange rates, because Alma does that automatically. So we have an API. It goes to an external site. It used to be xe.com. I think we changed it. And it brings the exchange rates automatically. So you don't have to do that. So I'll just say that this is 25 euros or 25 euro. And I will also add a fund. Again, you would probably remember your funds, or you would have them in a template. I don't. So let's see. We'll just buy this from the... Okay, it's a book about wine, so we can just about justify buying it from the chemistry book fund. Okay, just about. Okay, you have to use your imagination. You have to work with me. Okay, the nice thing here is I can see that I still have nearly $7,000. My currency is dollars. I have nearly $7,000 in the chemistry book fund, so that's fine. They have plenty of money to pay for it. Okay, so I just do this, and I click on Add Fund, and that's my record completed. But there are many other things, of course, that you can do. So let's imagine that... this email that I got asking me to order extra copies of Hungarian wine and winemakers, the person who asked me to order it said, can you please tell me when it arrives? Because I want to tell my students, or I want to, I don't know, do something with it. So what I can do is I can come here to the Interested Users tab, and I can enter a user ID number. Okay. I don't remember all my user ID numbers, but I remember this one. Okay, so I'm choosing this guy, and I'm saying that notify upon receiving or activation. Now, this guy, he doesn't want to place a reservation or a hold. He doesn't want to get the book. He's already got it at home. He just wants to know when it comes so that he can tell his colleagues, or he can tell his students or something. If we wanted to place a reservation, it would also be possible to do that. But we're not going to do that. We're just going to tell him when it comes in to the library. Okay? So I'll just click on Add User. Okay, so here it's here. You can see it's with my email address. Okay, so here the item. I have different options. Sorry, I want to just go back into this. I didn't want to come out, actually. What I just want to show you here, we have many tabs, and I can see that this tab, the invoice line tab, has nothing in it. Of course it has nothing in it. We've only just sending the order to the vendor. So this is gray. And this tab, the Interested Users tab, has got something in it. So the little box is blue. It means that you don't have to do this. Click on communications and see, well, there's nothing in communications. Okay, so this is why this tab can be useful. So what I have the option of doing now, let's just go back here. Again, I didn't want to come out. So I'm just going to click on this option, Order Now. Okay, I get some. Okay, so I need to add. I didn't add the event. I thought I did add it. So let me just do that quickly. So you can also see, because of my mistake, that Alma doesn't let you do things that wouldn't be a good idea, like trying to order a book without a vendor. That's not a good idea. So Alma didn't let me actually do it. So I'm just now correcting my mistakes. But the important thing for you to remember is that a lot of this information can be stored in the template. So you don't need to add it every time. Okay, so let's add the fund. Okay, so I think I now have everything. So I have different options. I can save and continue, or I can just click on Order Now. And what that means is that this order will be immediately sent to the vendor. Okay, so there's some information here. I can click on Confirm. And now Alma sends this order either via EDI or via email, or could even print, and the order goes immediately to the vendor. There are other options that can be used at this stage as well. So any questions about that? So yes.
Can you modify a set of users?
Set of users. You could put them all in individually, but that wouldn't be a very good solution. I think that the best solution to do that would be to have a group email address. So, for example, we have exlibris.europe@exlibrisgroup.com. So I would do something like that. That would be the way to do that. Yeah. So in the National Library, this is maybe a standard way of order. You find a book, you create a bibliographic record, you place an order, the book comes, you do the invoice receiving, and so on. Okay. In the university libraries, we have some universities represented here as well. So you will do this maybe for additional copies, but you might get other books in other ways. So do you use, for example, do you order at the vendor site, or do you always create the order in the library system and send it to the vendor? Which of those? So do you use the vendor website to place the order? You do that. So like Coutts, for example, if it was English language books, or Harasovitz for German, or different ones. Okay, so what I showed you was a single order for an additional copy. But if you're using the vendor site, then you can also import the data. So the vendor can give you a file. If you place the order on their site, they can give you a file. You can import that file into Alma, and you don't need to do any of that process that we just did just now. So this was a process for ordering an individual copy of a second copy of an individual item, or third copy, or whatever. So are you also using patron-driven acquisitions, or not yet? in the universities? No patron-driven acquisitions? No. Okay, so this is another model that we support in ALMA. This is becoming quite popular in other parts of Europe now. And basically, it's another way of collection development. What happens is that the vendors provide you with bibliographic records. You load these bibliographic records into ALMA. They're displayed in Primo as the discovery solution for the end user. But they're not things that you own. They are potentials, usually for electronic books. So then, for example, there are different models, but for example, if an item is used three times for more than 5 minutes, you automatically purchase it. Okay? So it's called patron-driven acquisition, sometimes demand-driven acquisition. What it means is that you're not involved in every decision, but we load, let's say, in the medical university, we load 5,000 medical books. You know, we put aside 5,000 euro, okay? So the students use these books. Each time one is used for the third time for more than 5 minutes, it gets purchased automatically. Nothing to do in ALMA, by the way. It all happens automatically. And when the 5,000 euro is finished, it stops. Okay? So this is patron-driven acquisition. And it's becoming much more common. Okay? There are some risks with it. If you put 50,000 euro in at the beginning of the year, and it's all used within 3 days, then you can't buy anything else. Okay, so usually libraries have a small amount of money in their PDA. But it's basically collection development by patrons, or in the National Library, collection development by the nation, which is a bit different. It's something that's becoming quite popular. The important thing for ALMA is that it's automated, okay? So nothing really for you to do. So I'm doing some acquisitions work. While I'm doing that, I want to have a look at another area of ALMA, because what I can see here is a task list. And the task list is ALMA telling me things that I need to do based on a number of things, based first of all on my role. Okay, so I'm a technical services manager in ALMA University. ALMA knows that, and we saw all about roles a little bit earlier on anyway. Based on things that have happened before, okay, and based on ALMA's workflow engine. So what I can see is that there are 7 order lines which are assigned to me for review. Okay, so let me try to explain that. Let's imagine that we created a batch of 50 orders, okay, like we just did for one. So there were 50. Maybe it was automated in the way that I just said. So you ordered it on the supplier's website, you got a file, bibliographic records, EOD records, which is embedded order data, you loaded it, or ALMA loaded it, you don't even have to do it. 43 of the orders go directly to the vendor. Okay, there's nothing that stops them from going directly to the vendor. But 7 of the orders need to be reviewed by a human, by eyes. Okay? Because ALMA has been told, if this happens, do this. And if this happens, do that. Or don't do that. Okay? So 7 of these orders need intervention. So this is the concept, that Christian mentioned it also in his presentation, of exception handling. In ALMA, we try to have you only dealing with the things that you need to deal with. Those 43 orders that can go automatically, they've already gone. Okay, so what we're doing here is we're dealing with the exceptions. We're dealing with the, I don't want to say problems, but we're dealing with the orders that have issues. Okay, so I want to have a look at those. So I'm looking at the ones that are assigned to me, and I can see different reasons. So number one, it's an electronic book actually about Imperial Germany, and it tells me that mandatory information is missing or wrong. Okay, you see just where my mouse pointer is just now, just here. Mandatory information is missing or erroneous. Now, if mandatory information is missing, ALMA cannot add it, okay? It can't make a decision. Let's say you miss the vendor out, okay? ALMA can't decide which vendor to send it to. You need to decide that. Or if there's no fund on the record, ALMA can't decide that unless you put a default in. You have to tell it. So here, it sends it for review. It sends it to a person for review. Okay? Now, I told you that I was a manager. The best thing to do when you're a manager is not do it yourself, but give it to somebody else in your team. Okay? So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to click on Assign To, and I'm choosing one of the people in my team. Look at the huge team that I have. If only. Okay? So I'm choosing Bettina. She is actually in my team. I can add a note here. I can choose to send an email, but I don't need to do any of these things because as soon as I click on Assign To, the next time she logs into ALMA, this will be in her task list. It will be there for her to do. Okay? So this is another example of the workflow of ALMA. I don't need to give her a post-it note saying, please, can you finish this record for Imperial Germany? I don't need to send her an email. I don't need to do any of those things because ALMA will deal with all of that for me. Okay, so I can just now let her do it. Now, this one, the third item, the 500 Hidden Secrets of Brussels. Wow. Okay, so I was in Brussels last week. If you look at these, you can see all the places that I've been. Okay, I was also in Norway. So you can see all the places that we've been. And in the future, people will see Hungary and its fine wine as well. Okay, so the 500 Hidden Secrets of Brussels. I know that I want that book, but I don't have any money to buy it just now. Okay, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to choose to defer the order. Okay. I'm going to choose a date when I expect to get more money. Okay, so in the UK, we'll just take the UK as an example. The money, the next year's money, becomes available on the 1st of April. So I think that on the 1st of April next year, I'm going to have some money and I could order this book. Now, I'm going to say at the moment, no available fund. Okay, that's why I'm not ordering it just now, because I haven't got any money. It's quite simple. Okay, so I click on defer. What do I have to do now? The answer is nothing. I can forget about this item forever, because on the 1st of April next year, it will come back. It will be in my task list, waiting for me to do something with it. Okay? Now, of course, if the library receives an extra 100,000 euros from the government. I know this might be unlikely, but if you receive an extra 100,000 euros from the government and you want to go back and order all the things that you deferred, of course you can get them back. But what I'm telling you is that routinely you don't have to. You just forget about it. On the 1st of April next year it will be there and you can decide, okay, I take it from this fund, and I'll place the order. So this is how ALMA is saving you from maybe maintaining lists and making notes and saving cards and all these things that you probably do to manage your business just now. ALMA tries to eliminate that by dealing with all of those things for you. Okay. Now, Bettina Schmidt, she's in my team. I told you that a little bit earlier on. Because I'm a manager, I can go to the Assigned to Others tab. I can limit by her. Okay, Schmidt. here. And from here, I can look at the 14 purchase order lines that are in review that are assigned to Bettina. Because I'm a manager, I have an overview of what's happening in the system. Now, if Bettina was on vacation and I wanted somebody else to do this, then I could reassign them as well. Okay, so this first item, somebody has come into the library, they're screaming about it because it's urgent. Okay, I can imagine this happens maybe sometimes as well. So what I want to do is I click on assign to, and I give it to somebody else. So I'll give it to this person, she's also in my team. I'll give her a message, not so much information, click on assign to, and that's gone to her task list. Okay? So everything just moves through the different stages. Now, if I come back now to my Alma dashboard, you will see that there are 5 order lines that are assigned to me for review because I managed to move some of them to other people in my team. And this is a good example of the workflow engine and also the exception handling that we talk about with Alma. So it's almost 12:45. That was when you asked me to stop. We have 2 minutes. So any questions for those 2 minutes?
If you want to assign not a single item, but a batch of items to someone, how would you do that?
You can also work in batches as well, so you can select all. We also have many jobs in Alma, which allow you... So let's imagine that there was a new cataloger, okay? And the new cataloger always put the subject heading in... Okay, that's not a very good example, but... Okay, let's just take it as an example. So the new cataloger always put the subject heading in 609 instead of 600. Okay, what you can do is you can batch together all the records that have a subject heading in 609, and you can make a normalization rule, and you can say move 609 to 600, and you can run it on the batch of records. So we have many, many jobs in Alma that are intended for batch updating. Something else that's very important, you see here, order lines that have a status of review that are unassigned. So that means that they're in the pot and nobody is handling them yet, okay? So they're not assigned to anybody. So that's really like the all of them, the job, that the people that the people who have this role can take from there and do them. So this is the concept of the pot where they're not assigned to a specific person, but they are available for anybody to work on.
So you basically could do a search, and with the result of the search, you could all of those.
Indeed. That's. Yeah, I'll show you in the afternoon that example as well.